Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Evening. Buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice.
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyers rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana.
Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Thursday morning. This segment, typically with Joe Rexrode, is brought to you by Holly Gerenzen, your local GEICO agent on Rosa Parks Boulevard. Holly can help you out with your car, home, motorcycle, boat, and RV insurance. Located at 2120 Rosa Parks Boulevard, think local, buy local with GEICO. With that, we are pleased to bring in our good friend John Glennon from The Athletic. John, what's going on, brother?
Not too much. Trying to keep up with everything here, Robbie. How you doing?
Doing great. Hope you are safely practicing your social distancing.
Oh, I'm way out there. I think I've left the house like maybe once, twice in the last 3 days. A little mailbox trip, and that's about it.
Toilet paper, you able to find any out there?
We started stocking early, so we're in a good position here. We feel like we've got a leverage if anybody wants toilet paper.
look for some eBay movement from the Glennon household soon.
That's right.
Glennon is a pro. So, John, what did you make of the move the Titans made yesterday to send Jarrell Casey to the Denver Broncos for a 7th-round pick? What was your initial reaction to the move, and what do you think could be coming next for the Titans now that they've made that move?
Yeah, I mean, my initial reaction was, wow. This was one we definitely did not see coming. But it was also kind of one of those moves that the more you looked at it, the more you understood it, in that the Titans clearly wanted to get some more cap space. Jarrell Casey was going to be due about $5.5 million, was going to become guaranteed on his 2020 contract in just a few days. That's why it happened now. And of course, the Titans saved a bundle for next year as well. The question, of course, becomes what are they clearing the cap space for? And certainly the speculation is Jadeveon Clowney, which would make sense in a lot of ways, but still, until we see what player it is, it's hard to judge this move because we don't know what the Titans are doing exactly with that money. But the loss of Casey, certainly a huge one, both in the locker room and on the field. Casey was kind of a cornerstone type player, a guy who was a captain for 6 straight years. So big loss in that regard for the Titans.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things, John, is you start stacking the names. It's going to be a really different locker room next year. I mean, even Mariota, now that's a little different because I think Tannehill sort of assumed that quarterback, and leader of the offense role. But, I mean, we expect Woodyard to be gone. Obviously, even Cam Wake came in and was a nice addition, but that was short term. But, I mean, Walker and Casey in particular, you're talking about, and Woodyard. I mean, that's 3 guys right there. To me, who were, I don't know how high you put them, but I'd put them pretty high on the list of important voices in that locker room, all moving on. And obviously there are some really important guys coming back, and we'll find out about Logan Ryan. But is there concern just about that much disruption in an aspect of this team that, the Titans have told us over and over again is a really important part of their success?
I think there has to be, until we see which of the younger guys are ready to kind of step up and fill those roles. And certainly there are some solid candidates. The Titans still have Kevin Byard. Kenny Vaccaro, I think, will be a good leader. You know, even like a Daquan Jones has some leadership ability from kind of a example type player. And then you look on the other side of the ball, of course, you've got the quarterback, Tannehill. Ben Jones is a captain. Taylor Lewan, of course, very outspoken. And then, you know, even a guy like a Derrick Henry started becoming more of a leader too. But, yeah, you're right. It's a huge slice of experience, of leadership there that's gone. You know, and we all tend to look at these transactions on paper and say, okay, that's going to give the Titans this amount of money, and they need to fill this type of role on the roster and so forth. But yeah, we can't overlook that either. And you know, we know that every year the team is going to look different, but that is that's a very big slice of leadership. So we're certainly going to have to see some new leaders emerge and you know, play more significant roles in that regard next year for the Titans.
John Glennon from The Athletic on the line with us. And John, obviously a lot still left to be done this offseason. I would even say the free agency grade at this point is incomplete, but just on its face value, what did you make of the Vic Beasley signing by the Titans? Because I got to be honest with you, I was not overly inspired by that one.
I think that probably reflects the sentiment of a lot of Titans fans out there. That one was a bit of a surprise to me, because certainly there have been question marks raised about Vic Beasley over the years. You know, the Titans let him walk after his contract expired this year. And if you look at his career, and at least in terms of sack production, it's been a roller coaster. You know, he had the 1 year with 15 and a half, and then he kind of dipped down to, say, five or so for a couple of years. And I think last year he bumped it back up to eight. But, you know, I guess the good news is at least there's a little bit more depth on the edge right now. I don't know if that was the big edge rusher that Titans fans had in mind when they figured, you know, they were going to fill an edge rusher role. So I still wonder, you know, and again, the name Clowney keeps coming up. I still wonder if that is the shoe that's still going to drop here. The Titans have a large amount of cap space now, you know, there's not a ton of guys that are still out there, so I still have to wonder, you know, is Jadeveon Clowney going to be a Titan here at some point?
Yeah, and that was going to be my next question. One, I'm going to give you two here. One, is there anyone else out there that could be inspiring or interesting, maybe a little bit off the radar? And two, how much would you be willing to pay Jadeveon Clowney right now? I mean, there's reports out there that he's looking for 20, which... Whew, talk about sticker shock. What do you think is a reasonable number for him?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, I think he's clearly out pricing himself right now from what it sounds. If those $20 million averages or estimates are accurate, you know, you look at Dante Fowler, who has some pretty good numbers in terms of an edge rusher, and I think he signed for 3 years at $48 million. You know, that's probably more in the neighborhood of what teams are looking for. You know, I think if you look at the tags right now, you know, a defensive end franchise tag is about $17.8 million. An outside linebacker tag, which probably, you know, is more accurate for Clowney, is about $14.8 million. So maybe somewhere in between those, or closer to the defensive end even, is where Clowney might come in at this point. You know, and I think if the Titans are indeed pursuing Jadeveon Clowney, the good news at this point is a lot of teams have either franchised their big edge guy or they've signed guys here so far in free agency. So there's not a lot of teams, you wouldn't think, that are still in the running for a Jadeveon Clowney type. And not a lot of teams that are running up his price tag. So from that respect, I think it has to be encouraging in terms of money laid out for a guy like him.
John, we were talking in the last segment about the backup quarterback position for the Titans. Obviously not going to be in as good of a spot as they were last year from that regard, but if you were John Robinson in the Titans, how would you approach addressing the backup quarterback position?
Well, you know, I mean, they do have a lot of interest in Logan Woodside. You know, it sounds a little bit far-fetched, you know, certainly because Logan Woodside hasn't played much in the NFL, but they do like him and will give him a serious look, I think. You know, he's a guy that's been practice squad for the last 2 years, but, you know, he shows flashes, you know, in training camp, preseason, and so forth. So, He's worth a look, but I do think there has to be at least another veteran competing there in camp. You know, I think the biggest name out there probably, well, aside from someone like Jameis Winston, who isn't going to be coming here as a backup quarterback, you know, what about someone like a Blake Bortles? You know, again, you're talking a backup quarterback role here. That's a guy with all kinds of NFL experience, certainly, and has certainly proven he can win some games. So if you really want to have a decent 1-2 punch, he'd probably be the guy. You know, the pickings are kind of slim after that in terms of veteran guys. You look at maybe, you know, Brett Hundley, who played in Green Bay, you know, a decent amount for 1 year. Maybe a Geno Smith, you know, a Matt Moore who's getting up in years. So the names are not especially prominent ones at this point. I think, you know, again, Blake Bortles, in terms of experience and a guy who's actually won some games, probably head and shoulders above most of the guys that are available right now.
Yeah, but see, it can't be Bortles because the dream would be Bortles being Jarrell Casey's teammate. And you know, interviewing Casey, but what do you think about your new teammate, Blake Bortles? Are you pretty excited or what? Although they do play the Broncos next year, right? So
they do.
Yeah. So we can flip it around and hear Jarrell Casey rip backup quarterback Blake Bortles before the game.
That's true. That's true. It does set up some interesting potential matchups. But yeah, from a Titans standpoint, you know, as I say, the pickings are certainly kind of slim. So I don't know. You at least have to take a look at that guy right now.
That would be fun. I'm in.
I'm in too. John Glennon from The Athletic has been our guest here on Morning Drive. John, thanks so much for joining us this morning, man. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. When we come back, we'll get back into the Jarrell Casey trade that sends him to the Denver Broncos. What's our reaction to that? And where do we think the Titans go next with the cap space they freed up? You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Jarrell Casey traded yesterday by the Tennessee Titans to the Denver Broncos for a 7th-round pick and what I think everybody has realized is basically a salary dump at this point to clear up some cap space. The question then becomes, what are you clearing up cap space for? Who are you clearing up cap space for? That's what we're hoping to find out maybe today, maybe sometime in the coming weeks for the Tennessee Titans. A lot of people, Joe, have connected the dots to Casey being traded, freeing up the cap space, the Titans' need that they have for an edge rusher, and they have put those dots squarely on the back of Jadeveon Clowney. We were talking earlier in the show. Clowney makes sense from a lot of different reasons. You know, he's a good player. Obviously, the name recognition that goes along with him. He can be, especially when he's on, a really dominant force on that line and on the rush. But you look at the sack numbers, they're not great. And look, we all understand there are a whole lot of things that go into rushing the passer besides just the total sack numbers. It's about, you know, the pressure you generate on the quarterback, you know, throwing him off schedule, being disruptive. But you do look at the sack numbers for something. And last year, in 13 games, he had 3 sacks. So you start hearing these price tags and these rumors floating out there. I think Diana Russini put out there that Clowney may be asking for $20 million per year right now for his next deal. If I'm the Titans, I'm not really coming anywhere near that for Jadeveon Clowney. What do you think?
No, I agree. I mean, I think John Glennon, our last segment, had a good little kind of the numbers of where it should be. It should probably be somewhere between the tag number for linebackers and defensive ends. He's a versatile player. Look, he's a very talented player. He's a physical force on defense. You can move him around. You can do different things with him, as you said. It's not all about sack numbers. The career best he ever had was 9.5. That was the 1 year that Mike Vrabel was his defensive coordinator for, you know, a defense that was really bad that year, but also a defense that was very injury-riddled too. So Clowney was still able to produce without, you know, the same amount of help that he often had in Houston. But he's not a sack guy, and I just $20 million seems crazy to me. For if 14.8 is that what Glennon said was the cap number? You know, the which again, for people who don't know, you know, that's basically that's what the average of the top five at the position would be. If someone got tagged who was an outside linebacker, that'd be the number. Yeah. 15 I could live with, you know, for Clowney. 20 is that's getting a little rich, but maybe, I mean, how many teams are really in on Clowney right now? How many suitors are there for him? Because the smaller that list is, you know, that's how the number goes down.
Yeah, and you would think the Titans are going to be one of those teams in that mix. I also wonder, like how does Logan Ryan factor in this into this as well? Because you know you've missed out on Jack Conklin, you franchise tagged Derrick Henry now that. Conklin is gone. Casey is gone. You've got some cap space there to play with. Are you able to bring back Logan Ryan at this point? How much of a priority would that be for John Robinson and the Titans to get a deal done with Logan Ryan and bring him back? And we've assumed that with this cap space freed up from Jarrell Casey, they're going to address the defensive line or at least the pass rush in some form or fashion. And I think we all still feel that way. You can't just get rid of Jarrell Casey and leave a hole in the line there. But I do wonder how much Logan Ryan factors into these plans and how expensive Logan Ryan is going to be for his next contract here.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, we've talked a few times today about the voices in the room, leadership, and you know, veteran guys who kind of set the tone in there. Logan Ryan's right at the top of the list. Right at the top of the list. He hasn't been around a long time. But I'd say, you know, there are very few guys who command as much respect as he does in there. So now you lose a Casey, a Walker, we assume a Woodyard,
yeah,
a Mariota, a Conklin, a guy like Logan Ryan. From that perspective, there's a lot of attraction to bring him back.
I mean, even Cam Wake. I mean, he was only there for a year, but you're talking about a veteran guy that a lot of younger players in that locker room, I'm sure, listen to.
Right. Yeah, and so you're bringing in, so now you add Vic Beasley, a guy who is going to come in and people are going to wonder, you know, can he tap into his ability and get the most out of himself? I mean, is he a guy, you know, this always happens too. When a guy like that leaves a town, then you hear all kinds of, you know, bad stuff about him from people. But the fact is that he never came close to that 2016 season in the next three. So that's a guy you think would need, you know, maybe to be guided by some guys like Cam Wake and Jarrell Casey and so on and, you know, so forth. So Logan Ryan's value to me from that perspective is higher. And again, if you lose him, I think the Titans are probably going to draft a corner either way at some point. But you, again, have weakened your defense just as you have by losing Jarrell Casey. Logan Ryan did so many different things. He's not a guy that you want to see manned up with, you know, with a speedy receiver. We saw that the Texans took advantage of him on Kenny Stills in that game and didn't go well for the Titans. But he does a lot of things really well. He's really a tremendous blitzer, and he can play all over the field, and he probably knows what's happening on the field as well as most guys in the league. So then how much do you spend on that? What's the number for him? Can you do that and still add a piece? I mean, you know, you got to take it all the way to the limit, of course.
Joe, the other day we talked about the legacy that Delanie Walker leaves behind with the Titans now that he's moved on and the Titans have parted ways with Delanie Walker. Now that Jarrell Casey has been shipped out to Denver and is no longer a Tennessee Titan, what do you think his legacy will be as a member of the Titans? A lot of really good years for Jarrell Casey on teams that weren't very good. And now that they've started to turn the corner as a franchise, he's on the wrong side of 30 now, I guess, quote unquote, the wrong side of 30. You know, a tough part of the business, but now he's gone too. Right, what do you think his time in Nashville will be remembered for?
Well, Jarrell Casey's got to be one of the great Titans of the Titans era, right?
Yeah.
One of the great players in franchise history in the Titans era. mean, you're talking about a five-time Pro Bowler, a guy I thought immediately when you start watching him week to week, I remember saying, man, this guy does not get talked about enough in this league. You know, he's just a dominant football player. And also, a lot of guys do things in the community. You know, Jarrell Casey and his wife went above and beyond, and so that's also part of his legacy. But, yeah, I mean, how many guys were better football players than him who played for the Titans over those years? You can come up with the obvious names, and you can, you know, Keith Bullocks and guys like that, and Blaine Bishops, and you got your, you know, the McNair, George, Mason, all these guys, Wycheck and Matthews. But if you're doing like an all-Titans team from the Titans era, first of all, he's absolutely starting on it.
Yep.
And I would say he's probably in the top 10 to 12 guys. Yep. I mean, honestly, like Delanie Walker's probably the best free agent signing, but Jarrell Casey was more impactful longer here than, you know, than Delanie Walker. So I think the legacy is strong. And, you know, it'd be great to see him do well in Denver. I'd have little question that he will go out there and be motivated by this. And maybe he wasn't as surprised as everybody else, but it's got to be tough for a guy like that to work so hard, get out of those awful years, get to this point, and think maybe you've got a team here that could take another step and then know that you're not going to be part of it.
Yeah, and I still think he has good football left in the tank. I would agree with what you said earlier. I don't think he was as dominant this past season as we've grown accustomed to Jarrell Casey being. But having said that, I don't think he's just like completely fallen off the table either. I mean, he was 30 years old this past year when he played. Obviously, the older he gets, probably the less effective he's going to get. And John Glennon, I mean, you talked about his point earlier of saying this was a very Bill Belichick-esque move made by the Titans. Belichick has always been famous for maybe getting rid of a guy 1 year too early rather than getting rid of a guy 1 year too late. It kind of feels like that's what the Titans are doing here, not even with just the money part of it, but the age part of it as well. But I would expect that especially in the next year, maybe 2 years, he's going to go to Denver. He's going to be a pretty good player out there. Like I still think he's got enough good football left in the tank.
Yeah. He's still a good player. There's no doubt. He's a very good player. He's just, I mean, last year, and the question got, I would say that question got asked to Mike Vrabel several times for sure at different points in the season. Basically, what's up with Casey? You know, are you concerned? Things like, I mean, because he just was not he didn't show up. I mean, a lot of times, look, you're watching a football game. Casey was a guy that you had to notice. Everybody watches the ball. Casey was a guy you had to notice if you were watching the Titans before. And you could see that last year it was not as consistently dominant as it had been. So clearly this move speaks to their feeling on that too.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, salary dump. But if you thought that he was still the Jarrell Casey that you signed to that extension, then you still have him on your football team.
Yeah, no question about it. When we come back, Aaron Reese, who covers the Houston Texans for The Athletic, will join us. We'll get into the DeAndre Hopkins, Bill O'Brien stuff going on, swirling about the trade that was, in our opinions, one of the worst trades in NFL history. We'll get into all that next with Aaron Reese. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad here on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And, Joe, we've been talking all week about the trade that sent DeAndre Hopkins to the Arizona Cardinals from the Houston Texans. And now to help us talk a little bit more about that, we bring in our friend Aaron Reese, covers the Houston Texans from The Athletic. Aaron, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So what's the reaction been like in Houston since the Texans made the decision to send DeAndre Hopkins to the Arizona Cardinals, getting back David Johnson in return?
As you can imagine, not great. Although, you know, I've been spending a lot of time in my apartment, so maybe I just haven't bumped into the right people to talk about this, I guess. But as far as the few people I have spoken to and the reaction online and stuff, I mean, it certainly seems like Houston, like everyone else, kind of panned the deal, and with good reason. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And I think it the few hours maybe where someone had to defend Bill O'Brien vanished when or the time ran out when Stephon Diggs got traded for so much more. You know, on the same day, it was kind of just like, you know, I was like, did he even call Buffalo or what was the market? And yeah, so it's pretty bad. I think everyone who would still like GM O'Brien, that time has run out.
And then, Aaron, of course, you've got Michael Irvin on ESPN yesterday telling a very bizarre story that I still can't totally wrap my arms around. What do you make of that and of, you know, the relationship that O'Brien and Hopkins had and how much of a factor that was in this?
Yeah, you know, I mean, with regard to Irvin's story, I mean, you know, it's like, it was so bizarre and it was on TV. It's like, I don't know if it probably isn't all true, but there has to be some grain of truth to just all of it. And I think if nothing else, you can say that they obviously didn't have a good relationship. And that ultimately is kind of the key here, whether he's comparative to Aaron Hernandez or just didn't like him. I mean, and that's kind of the problem, I think, in a lot of Houston fans' minds is, this is two straight years now, you know, of him trading away a star player, and then in the aftermath, it kind of comes out that he didn't get along with him. And you know, I think with regards to Jadeveon Clowney, at least people could argue whether he was actually worthy of paying long term. And you see that now, Clowney's still not signed. I mean, the Texans weren't necessarily alone and kind of having concerns about whether to pay that sort of guy long term. But DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, is kind of universally viewed as one of the best receivers, and maybe, you know, demanding and stuff, but he only missed two games. One of them was the Week 17 game that the Titans beat Houston. The Texans weren't playing a lot of guys. So, you know, I think it, to a lot of people, it doesn't add up, and it ultimately comes to look like the coach is just picking the guy who he likes over. Maybe at this point, is he doing it over the sake of winning? You know, is it costing them actually being a good team? Because that's something people said in the past, at least in the past, every move O'Brien is making, even if it seemed somewhat nonsensical, like you're spending all these assets on Laramie Tunsil, you're trading a third round pick to get another corner at the deadline, you know, you're doing things that make the team better, at least, except with the exception of Clowney trade. And then now this DeAndre Hopkins trade, I mean, it's hard to argue that they're going to be a better team. And I don't think they can, no matter what they do this offseason, can really salvage that production and just find it other places.
Aaron Reese on the line with us, covers the Texans for The Athletic. Aaron, how has Bill O'Brien acquired this much power in Houston? I mean, you understand it when something like this happens with Bill Belichick in New England, and you win six Super Bowls, you pretty much earn the right at that point to have as much power as you want. How is it that Bill O'Brien has gotten himself in a position where he's gotten this much power with the Houston Texans?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like I feel like every time I go on the radio, it's like people want to talk about this, and I understand it's because it doesn't really make sense to a lot of people. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's like ownership trusts him. Cal McNair, the team chairman, has trusted him ever since taking over for his dad, who passed away, you know, in 2018. Yeah, but Cal hasn't really hasn't spoken publicly since he's taken over in that time in 2018, and he's kind of let Bill just become completely the face of the organization and let him call the shots. So it's hard to totally suss out what Cal's motivations are, but if you kind of just read through his actions and his lack of you know, wanting to speak out and be in front of people, that he seems to kind of want to operate with status quo and do what his dad was doing. And what his dad was doing was putting trust in O'Brien. He had obviously signed Bill O'Brien to a contract extension a little while before he had passed away. But the funny thing about that contract extension was it was meant to line up with Brian Gain, who was you know, supposed to be O'Brien's friend, and you know, he was on the committee to select him and all that. And then Gain only lasts one season in the job before Bill assumes more power. So yeah, I mean, in terms of how it got there, I guess you can say anything other than that, you know, he's clearly found a way to wear out the two GMs who he had to work with and convince them that this was obviously the best case scenario, the McNair family, that is. But I mean, they obviously at one point did have interest in Nick Caserio, the Patriots director of player personnel, and they pursued him last year, and the Patriots, you know, threatened tampering charges. And I know that people within the building were still kind of wondering if Caserio was eventually going to come or if he wasn't going to come. So I think that was always a possibility. But beyond that, it seemed like if they couldn't get Nick Caserio or if that didn't work out right away, they ultimately, after having kind of run with this temporary operation, or at the time temporary operation of just not having a GM, decided, well, you know, they can just continue to operate without one. So that's how it's gotten there now. If that was always a Brian's long-term plan, or if he just kind of thought he was going to get Caserio and then he didn't, so he just would rather be in charge at that point. I'm not quite sure, but that's how it got to where it is.
So this team, Aaron, what's next? What can be done here? Because I can't believe that Randall Cobb is it when it comes to, you know, helping Deshaun Watson. You got this tremendous player on his rookie deal. To me, you've got, you know, urgency to try to maximize that time frame. And, you know, we all know Will Fuller is very talented, but it's hard to count on him for a full season at this point. Stills is a nice player. What's ahead in terms of additions for GM Bill to try to make this better?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I think there are more moves ahead. I don't think that you make this sort of DeAndre Hopkins trade like this unless you have kind of a plan moving forward. Although, on the other hand, like I just said, this move kind of runs counter to everything he's been doing in the past, so it's hard to suss out what the plan is. But, yeah, I mean, they still have space to make some more moves. I think, obviously, part of the motivation of making the move this year is the idea of, well, this guy wants a new contract, and it's a year when, you know, the rookie receiver class is supposed to be the best in decades, right? So, well, if you get a high pick, you can maybe replace a good bit of that production at a very cheap cost, and then sign Randall Cobb and replace a bit more of that production. And they did need a slot receiver, but he doesn't replace DeAndre Hopkins. But, you know, I think regardless of what they do, it is kind of hard to see a way in which they get better as an offense. I mean, it's just I've thought about every which way. You know, even if you get the best version of David Johnson back, and he's kind of redundant to the skill set that Duke Johnson has, and you're spending a lot of money in that backfield. Combined Duke Johnson, David Johnson, you're spending more money, a larger share of the cap than the Titans are going to spend on Derrick Henry on the franchise tag. And, you know, Derrick Henry is a quite a bit better player than those two guys. So it's really hard to see, like, just where he's going to be able to find edges on his roster. And I am starting to doubt that he will.
Aaron, last thing for you here. You know, Deshaun Watson has come out a few times in the last year or so and has been public in his support for Bill O'Brien. What do you think is going through Deshaun Watson's mind right now that they've traded his top threat down the field away to Arizona?
Oh, I mean, I think he was no doubt frustrated and surprised. I mean, he was pretty close with Hopkins. I mean, they both went to Clemson, not at the same time, but they kind of had that connection, and obviously they were very productive together on the field. And, you know, like he's not dumb by any means. He obviously can see all the things I'm saying in terms of that. It's like really impossible to see a way in which they replace that production. But, you know, what's funny about the NFL, obviously, is that, like, a guy like him, even if he's frustrated or whatever, like, he's not going to hit the free market more than likely, because he could just be tagged and controlled for a few more years. And so, yeah, at the end of the day, at least publicly, he's going to probably back what O'Brien says and just, you know, keep his head down and move along and sign his big deal eventually and you know, just eventually get over it. But I think in the immediate term, he's obviously pretty frustrated or slightly frustrated and upset and trying to figure out, you know, how he gets this offense on track without him.
Aaron Reese from The Athletic has been our guest here on Morning Drive, covers the Houston Texans. Aaron, thanks so much for taking time to come on with us, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Stay safe.
Absolutely. You too. Just crazy in Houston going on right now. And, you know, it's you kind of go through the evolution process of how Bill O'Brien has acquired this much power in Houston. It's fascinating that it's gotten to this point, but also, like, I think it's going to run this franchise directly into the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. You could sell it as circumstantial, but it looks like he's run people out of there, and it looks like power grabs. Yeah, I mean, that's what it looks like from the outside. So that's fine if you do the job well.
Right.
But I'd love to know the approval rating. And that's the thing. It's like there's two jobs he's doing right now. So – one side of that, he's done okay.
He's okay.
Yeah, I mean, he's fine. He's you can't argue with multiple AFC South championships. He's done some good things, figured some things out. He's dealt with a lot of injuries, but the GM side of the job, man, the approval rating in Houston for him, that's got to be like 3%, right?
Could he be less popular in Houston than like A.J. Hinch is right now with the Astros? I think there's a good chance.
I mean, there's more, you know, much more important stuff going on, but Houston sports right now, you know, until and unless Bill O'Brien does something to make Texans fans feel better about this. Oh, not good.
It's a tough time to be a Houston sports fan right now. I mean, I guess when the Rockets were playing, I mean, they were at least fun to watch.
Yes, they were fine.
Harden and Westbrook. But other than that, it's been a rough few months for a Houston sports fan. No question about it. We'll continue to have this discussion on the other side of the break. What do we make of this weird relationship between DeAndre Hopkins and Bill O'Brien? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Aaron Reese, who joined us in the last segment, covers the Houston Texans for The Athletic. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, this relationship between DeAndre Hopkins and Bill O'Brien is just so fascinating to watch. And we heard the comments by Michael Irvin on Get Up yesterday. You know, do I put a ton of stock into those? I mean, I guess some. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins came out yesterday on Twitter and said that the comments and everything going on was being blown out of proportion. Now, he did not deny that Bill O'Brien made comments about, you know, Aaron Hernandez, the children of his mother, or the mother of his children, I should say. But, and the children of his mother would be pretty hard. I mean, that'd be one of those things.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm glad you did. The look you gave me was just very inspiring there. Thank you. But it is one of those things where you're just like, he comes out after that and says, the relationship, I have the utmost respect for Bill O'Brien. And if everything that Michael Irvin says went down, actually went down, I don't know about you, but I would have a pretty hard time at that point having very much respect at all for Bill O'Brien if that was the case.
Well, yeah, that whole thing doesn't help Bill O'Brien at all. And I don't totally understand
either. Like the Aaron Hernandez part of it's really weird. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah. I mean, apparently that's a comment on like Hernandez's sway in the locker room. I don't know. I guess I didn't realize that Hernandez had that much sway when he was in an NFL locker room.
Yeah.
But, and then the whole thing with the mothers of Hopkins' children, like, I mean, if you're going to say something like that to one of your players, I mean, how do you expect to have a good relationship after that?
Like, you know? Should probably at that point be prepared to get punched in the face. Like, that's one thing you probably ought to prepare for at that point.
Yeah, now then you have to, again, it's always, when you get to this game of telephone, you get this person said this,
yeah,
this person said that, you know, things can get twisted. And when Michael Irvin's one of the guys holding the telephone, then I'm a little bit, okay. But, I mean, it's interesting because Hopkins tweets and says, you know, it's blown out of proportion. So, and he's, you know, I respect Bill O'Brien and moving forward. Good for him. High road, classy. Good for Hopkins. He also didn't come out and say, nah, what Irvin said wasn't true.
Right.
You know, he didn't refute any of that. So it's very bizarre. I mean, Michael Irvin, no matter what you think of Michael Irvin, he's had his issues. He goes on television and directly quotes a conversation he had with Hopkins. Hopkins does not come out and refute it. So Hopkins told him that stuff. And obviously that was, I mean, it was almost like, considering it was more than one call, it was almost like Hopkins was trying to find answers too, like searching for like, there was this conversation, which is really weird.
Well, that's the other part of it. Like, how many days in a row was Michael Irvin going to call DeAndre Hopkins?
Yeah, just
he's like, I
give
called
me
him
something.
Once,
yeah,
and he really just kind of took the high road. But, you know, I got to thinking about it more, so I called him again the next day. Like, how many days in a row was Irvin going to sit there and just call DeAndre Hopkins? I know, DeAndre, I've called you 5 days in a row. But I just have questions, man. I got to keep asking them.
Yeah, so Hopkins, like on day two, is like, all right, I got to give this guy something
to
get this over with. So, very weird. And again, when you talk about all that stuff, you're not talking about what has been reported about Hopkins' deal and the fact that he would want to renegotiate the deal, redo his deal. Julio Jones did the same thing. He has a lot of years on it. Look, he should be paid right around the top of the league in terms of receivers. So just from that perspective, I understand trying to head that off and looking forward, you don't know if you want to pay that. But, like, how could you make this deal? I still keep coming back to that. Like, I can't – it's just bizarre. And like Aaron Reese from The Athletic in Houston told us last segment, as soon as the Diggs deal happens, whoever was still, like, out there defending O'Brien just shut right up.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And, look, I think we both agree, just from the initial reaction of it, this has got to be one of the worst trades – in NFL history that I remember seeing. I mean, you've watched the NFL for longer than I have, Joe, but I can't think of many that I would even put in the same boat as this trade with DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, the one that will always come to mind for me is Herschel Walker basically going to Minnesota from Dallas to build a dynasty in Dallas.
Yeah,
and I'd have to Google all the picks, but it was a boatload. That, of course, Jerry Jones, Jimmy Johnson turned into, the dominant team in the 90s. So, and the Vikings were in win now, bringing this great running back. We got everything else, and it did not work out well. That one will always stand out for me. But in recent years, I can't think of, like, just a high-impact trade like this that was this bad. Because, again, not often do you see top one, two, or three guy at a position dealt. And if you do, usually you see a return for it. So in recent years, I can't think of anything this bad.
No, I can't either. That's why this week has been so weird, to kind of figure out, regardless of what happened between Bill O'Brien and maybe his personal relationship with DeAndre Hopkins, I would think you've got to find a way to get a better return on this deal. Bill O'Brien was not able to do that, and now if you're a Titans fan, you feel pretty happy about that as we move forward and get closer and closer to next season starting. Joe, I want to get your thoughts on something, because I've kind of let you get through the show here without reminding you of this, because I'm scared of what your emotions could be. But today would have been the first day, the real first day of the NCAA tournament, and yet here we are. And we're not talking. I mean, the first four would have happened the other day. I think Tuesday would have been the first day of that. But we would be full swing into it here in about an hour and a half, 2 hours. We'd be getting close to tipping off in the first day of the NCAA tournament. Instead, it's all NFL free agency, baby.
Yep. I'd be somewhere in some city, probably with the Belmont Bruins right now, ready to cover, and I don't remember the days of the sites, but maybe they would have been in Greensboro about to play Maryland or Duke. Maybe they would have been in Cleveland about to play Michigan State, or Albany about to play Villanova. They would have been around a 14 playing a 3, maybe a 13 playing a 4. So actually, I wrote about Belmont today on theathletic.com. I caught up with their seniors, and I caught up with Casey Alexander. They're all scattered all over the country. And honestly, I will say, I know it's not easy for everyone to do this, but if you get a chance, if you're feeling terrible and depressed about things right now, I advise you to talk to a Belmont basketball player. I was blown away by the perspective of these guys. With a dream taken away, Tyler Scanlon went to Belmont to play at Belmont, and hopefully we'll get him on tomorrow. And he won the game over Murray State with a backdoor layup, and now he will never play in the NCAA tournament. Yeah, those guys are taking this extremely well as they socially distance themselves in their hometowns. But man, it's tough. I mean, there's a lot of virtual tournaments going on, and trying to pick the bracket or different brackets. I saw like Office Episodes bracket yesterday, all this stuff. When you really think about it, I mean, to me, it's the best tournament we have in sports in terms of just, the out-of-nowhere teams, like a Belmont who will beat a Duke or whatever. And it's an amazing 3 weeks of sports that we're missing. So, yeah, it hurts, man. I mean, this is the first time I haven't covered an NCAA tournament since the 90s.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. And look, even for me, like, I'm one of those guys that, football is around. I'm covering hockey, all these different things going on. I don't pay a whole lot of attention to college basketball, really, until this time of year. Once the tournaments come around, the conference tournaments in the SEC once the actual NCAA tournament starts. And to your point, like, I think this Thursday and the Friday of the opening Thursday and Friday of the NCAA tournament may be the single most fun day or most fun event to watch in all of sports. Like, you know, I love the Stanley Cup playoffs. That entire journey is so much fun to watch. I love Wild Card Weekend in the NFL. Like, all these different things, the NBA Finals I love. But watching Thursday and Friday of the NCAA tournament, that's just about as fun as it gets in terms of just the pure drama of it.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, someone did this story. You know, this is when a lot of people schedule their vasectomies for, you know, for this part of the week. So it's like, hey, I'm sorry, I have to sit on my couch icing and I got to sit here. And yeah, a lot of people go to Vegas, whatever it is. It's the first 2 days. I think the best round of the tournament is either the second round or the third round, Sweet 16, or maybe like the Saturday and Sunday of the first weekend, incredible games. But the first 2 days, it's all basketball all the time, and there's always something just wacky that happens. So one of many, many things we're going to miss, and we're going to appreciate more when we get it back.
When we come back, our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will join us. We'll get into Brady signing with the Buccaneers, maybe some other moves the Bucs could make in addition to that. That's next. You're listening to Morning Drive, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Mom, can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.